Hey, what's up? It's Ben Greenfield. Today's podcast guest is, I think, a four-timer, possibly even a five-timer. He's been on the show a lot. We always have a lot of fun when we chat. His name's Craig Dinkle. So you're going to love what we talk about today. He's training for this crazy hike, actually the hardest hike in all of America. And he's sharing all of his training secrets with us today. We talk nutrition, everything.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power. Speed. Mobility. Balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, what's up? It's Ben Greenfield, and I'm flying high this morning. I actually have been switching up my breakfasts of late. Actually, I'm curious. I want to hear what today's podcast guest had today for breakfast, because he's training for this crazy Sierra High Route solo in August. It's like this off-grid 200-mile hike at altitude, 9,000 to 12,000 feet altitude. So I'm curious, and we're going to dig into how he's training and how he's eating for that. But here's my switch up for breakfast. And you know what? I'm gonna say hello to you, Craig, first before I just start to talk about my breakfast while ignoring you.
No, hey, hello. It's great to talk to you again, and I'm dying to hear about your breakfast.
Okay,
my breakfast.
It actually included my breakfast did include some things that you introduced me to, but then it's kind of changed up because I'm of course halfway like F-list celebrity famous for my crazy big ass smoothies. Of late, I think was the one that I described on the Joe Rogan show, which was the Wendy's Frosty Smoothie, where I would take a whole bunch of bone broth and blend that up with ice and a little bit of lemon, which enhances the collagen absorption from the broth, then some stevia and a little bit of protein powder. And that's like the base. There's a bunch of little superfoods that go in there. But the trick is that you blend it for like 4 or 5 minutes. And as you blend it for 4 or 5 minutes, it introduces a little bit of air, a little bit of creaminess, and a little bit of frostiness to the recipe. But what I've been doing of late is simply, due to the fact I've been super busy in the mornings especially, and I've been consuming my breakfast while I'm working, even while I'm podcasting, I have a little bit of breakfast left here right in front of me. So I've been taking bone broth. I've been using this Kettle and Fire bone broth, and I've interviewed these folks in the past. They do like organic packaged bone broth, and what I do is I heat it up over the stovetop, and then I blend it with just a whole bunch of different super nutrients. So this morning into the bone broth, I put a couple teaspoons of maca root, a teaspoon of this black ant extract stuff, which is incredibly high in zinc. A little bit of vanilla stevia, and then I actually broke open 7 capsules of this Qualia Mind Nootropic, and I dropped all of that in there. And then I also, and I want to hear what your thoughts are on this, I broke open 3 capsules of AFA, 3 capsules of the Oxia, and 3 capsules of your chlorella. I'd put all of those in there in celebration of the fact that I would be interviewing you. I blended that all for about 2 minutes on high, and I sucked that down for breakfast. And I got to tell you, man, I'm flying high.
And it sounds like a witch's brew, man.
It tasted really good. I'll put the recipe in the show notes for everybody listening in. It's at bengreenfieldfitness.com/cleanup, because we're going to be talking about among other things today, how to clean up the hidden ingredients in your supplements. But bengreenfieldfitness.com/cleanup, I'll put that whole recipe. But in the meantime, Craig, what was your brew of choice today, if anything?
Oh, man, you know, I've had a recent event. I started to have a blood sugar issue, so I have to start managing my carbohydrate intake much more carefully than I've had to in the past. I've been a huge carbohydrate guy. I mean, I like bread, I like toast, I like jam, stuff like that in the morning with a lot of protein. But these days I have to keep sort of an eye on this thing and navigate the world through more protein than carbohydrates, which makes this trip that I'm going to be doing very interesting, because I'm going to be hiking, I'm going to be walking and hiking off route for about in rough terrain. And, hopefully I'll be doing about 7,000 vertical a day, but not less than, let's say, 5,000 vertical a day. I'm very, very curious to see how my metabolism works with blood sugar, because I have to eat a lot of carbohydrate up there, and I'll get a little less protein up there to drive me. And so I'm curious to see how my blood sugar works. But that's a long roundabout way to get to the answer to your question. These days, what I do for breakfast is pretty simple stuff. It's going to be like 4 over-easy eggs, or it's going to be this is going to sound strange, but I like omelets, but I don't like a heavy egg omelet. So I'll make two egg omelets with a bunch of cheese, some avocado, and some chicken or protein in there that I can handle. So I do that two times because I like the thinner egg omelet over than, you know, eggs tend to thicken up when you make them in an omelet. And I know that sounds a bit off course here, but that's how I like to eat my eggs.
Interesting. So are you concerned at all, and have you looked into this at all, about the fact that when you're trying to regulate blood sugar, you can experience blood sugar swings and high blood sugar, even with too much protein? I mean, the classic case would be the guy Sean Baker, who's the champion right now of the carnivore diet. He revealed his blood labs. He published them on his website, and he's like borderline type 2 diabetic. Granted, he's eating like, I think, 4 to 6 pounds of meat per day, but wow, his blood sugar levels are through the freaking roof because of the gluconeogenic effects of protein when you're trying to control blood sugar versus, say, doing more vegetables and monounsaturated fats, smaller amounts of saturated fats, that type of approach.
That's really interesting. I feel bad for that guy because I don't have that problem. I find that anytime I just maintain the exercise I do, and I train pretty hard. I guess we're going to get into that, but I don't always train hard. But when I'm training for an event, I do train event specific and grueling. We've talked a little bit about that in the past, but I find that when I just get really disciplined, here's my problem. I get really disciplined. I do a paleo-like diet, high protein, very low carbohydrate, high fat, and my blood sugar lines right up. The problem is that the consequences of that for me are hunger. I'm always hungry. And I've lost a lot of weight because of it. I used to weigh right in around 190, then in about 185. And right now I hover right around 178, 180, which is, it's a number from college days practically for me. But so I'm leaner than I've ever been. And I suppose that's a good thing. And I don't fit the profile for any sort of high blood sugar problem, but here it is. But no, great exercise, really good exercise. And mostly going heavy paleo puts my numbers right down into normal ranges. I mean, I can really get them back to normal. It's just hard. It takes a lot of discipline and, I'm hungry. So that's why I'm really curious about what's going to happen on the hike, because I can't eat like that up there. I have to have oatmeal for breakfast. I have to have high carbohydrate meals for dinner, but I'm trusting and counting on the fact that I'm going to be walking 10 hours a day.
It's a speed bump. And a lot of people don't realize this, especially a lot of endurance athletes. And I know that at the time of this recording, I was actually texting Ian Adamson the past couple of days about this, because I'm interested in possibly getting involved on a team next year. Primal Quest and Eco Challenge and some of these big adventure races, they're becoming a thing again. You know, all these big, long 7-day adventure races I used to watch when I was a kid. And I told him, there's a chance for me to be on a team. I might leap at something like that. But a lot of even these serious endurance folks don't realize that once you get into altitude, this was even interesting for me, and I found it when I was researching for Beyond Training, my last book about altitude training. I discovered that the body actually shifts into a higher amount of glucose and carbohydrate utilization at altitude. There's a direct correlation. So not only does your high level of physical activity dictate that the calories you're eating and the carbohydrates that you're eating are going to be a moot point when it comes to blood sugar regulation, but your body actually doesn't do as well with, say, ketosis or pure fatty acid utilization. The higher you get, the more you need to eat easy to digest carbohydrate sources.
Right.
So it's probably a little bit less of an issue for you at altitude, but I've still found, and at the time of this recording, I will have already released my podcast with Sammy Inkinen, who runs Virta Health, and they manage diabetic issues for a lot of people. I've also interviewed Dominique D'Agostino before, and those guys are very much into macadamia nuts and also spirulina and chlorella, which I know is an ingredient in the supplements that you make, the chlorella is. But the combination of the omega-3 fatty acids and the high nutrient density with low volume of algae, so it's easy to transport, combined with the the slow bleed of the high amount of saturated fats from the macadamia nuts is kind of like a really good 1-2 combo. And that's something I'll munch on. I'm actually flying to Estonia tomorrow. I have a 10.5 hour flight Seattle to Frankfurt first thing in the morning.
Do you ever stop moving? I mean,
no.
I mean, Jesus.
No. And I'll get on the airplane with a bag. My bag's already packed upstairs. Macadamia nuts and these energy bits, which have like, you know, chlorella and spirulina and stuff in them. And I've also, as soon as I get back, I go to race at altitude in Mesa, Colorado, the Train to Hunt World Championship. So I've got your Oxia, your Chlorella, and your AFA, and I'm loading with those. You know, I load with those for at least 2 weeks going into every one of my competitions. So I've got those packed in my bag. But macadamia nuts and these energy bits, like the chewable spirulina and chlorella tablets, that's what I'll tend to eat for long periods of time. But you also may want to use a strategy, you know, like throwing in some macadamia nuts to kind of stabilize the blood sugar and give you a slow bleed along with some of the more carbohydrate dense sources you'll have at altitude.
Yeah, it's a really good idea. And if I remember correctly, I got to look this up again, but I think macadamia nuts are actually the best nut that I can eat for, you know, managing blood sugar as the nut group goes. So that's definitely something that's going to be in my grab bag. I guess a lot of people like to make this stuff called GORP. You're probably familiar with it. It's M&Ms, peanuts, candies, all this sort of stuff.
GORP?
Yeah, that's an old term for it. GORP. Can you believe that? I don't know what else it's called.
GORP?
Yeah. Huh. It's an ugly name.
And what's in it?
They'll mix stuff up and it can have raisins, it can have dehydrated fruit, it'll have nuts of all kinds, M&Ms will be in there too. I never thought of it. It's really a great, you know, healthy energy source when you're up there in the mountains and climbing at altitude and going straight up and down and up all the time. But, you know, it's a lot of sugar, but I think these days there are better ways to fuel yourself. But so what you're talking about with macadamia nuts, I could do sort of a hybrid version of that, a newer hybrid version of GORP with macadamia nuts. Maybe raisins isn't such a bad thing in the world and some other nuts in there that will help move me along.
Yeah, I would even consider, and this is something a lot of people don't think about when they consider blood sugar regulation, the fermentability of your choice of carbohydrate. For example, dried fruit is good because it's pretty nutrient dense for the volume and it doesn't have a lot of water weight to it for climbing, but it's also extremely fermentable, especially if people have, like, you know, fructose malabsorption or FODMAP issues. So what I recommend a lot of times as an easy to digest carbohydrate source is something that's got like dextrin or a little bit of like a potato based starch. One that I like is dried plantains. You can get these from like the bulk food section of a lot of grocery stores. You gotta check to make sure they're not coated in canola oil, because a lot of them are. There's companies like Thrive Market online that will just sell you, you know, regular old organic plantain, but it's pretty light. And you can use that, you know, for example, you can have a bag with macadamia nuts, with plantain, or like a potato-based source, you know, dried sweet potato, dried yam. You can get this stuff, you know, again, like Thrive Market is a good place. Amazon has some of this as well. And you can mix it with the macadamia nuts and the algae. So instead of fermentable fruit, you've got an easier to digest, but still relatively dense. And also, you know, you could argue more ancestral kind of root based carbohydrate source, along with the, you know, the huge amount of calories you get from the mac nuts and the saturated fats and the slow bleed of energy from the mac nuts and then the nutrients from the algae.
Yeah, that sounds phenomenal. That sounds like a GORP I need to put together.
Yeah,
I love plantains too. I love plantains. So
call it good GORP.
Yeah, and I guess another term, I guess the more common term for it is trail mix. I don't know where the term GORP came from. That's what I first heard, but it's also called trail mix. So any combination of the things we just discussed that you just mentioned and I mentioned a minute ago would constitute trail mix or GORP, but. I like what you describe better. It sounds like a healthier fuel source. So that's something I think I'll build out.
Yeah.
I also have to resupply on this trip. I have to go in with about 15, 20 pounds of food. And after about 100 and 120 miles, somewhere right in around there, I have a resupply coming in. So I'll be having to resupply twice.
How do they get you your resupply on these trips?
Yeah, in this case, the trail, it's not a trail. I don't want to call it that because it's definitely not a look at the ground and walk. It's a look up at peak to peak. It's like a waypoint hike, if you will. So got to navigate from waypoint to waypoint, you know, looking up at peaks and figuring out how to get to the next waypoint. Nothing's a straight line. Most of it's not a straight line. Most of it's, okay, there it is, you know, 5 miles out or 3 miles out. Now I got to figure out how to get there. So it's up and down and around and over. But at about 100 and at about 100 and at about the 120 mile point, I'll go through a place called Red's Meadows. It's in the Mammoth area. And so I'll have a box waiting. I'll forward a box here. Have my brother forward me a box when I'm about 5 days into the hike. It'll be sitting there waiting for me. I'll show up there basically on vapor, you know, no fuel at all. Resupply. And then get back out there. And speaking of resupply, this is a pain in the butt because a lot of this stuff has to be put into a bear canister because I'm going through bear country. Fortunately, not brown bear country, just black bear country. But if you know the story, and a lot of people don't, grizzly bear are bad news. We all know that. And a lot of people don't understand how bad news black bear are, the difference between them. And certainly no guarantees here, but you have probably a better chance of surviving a grizzly bear attack if you know how to behave with a grizzly bear than you do if a black bear decides to attack.
But no kidding.
That's a fact. That's a hard, stone cold, ugly fact. If a black bear decides to attack, which they rarely do, that's the upside of being around black bears, that they just don't attack. But when they do, you have to fight for your life. They fight to kill. Grizzly bear, on the other hand, are 10 times stronger. They're tanks. They're brutal. They're tough as hell, as you know. Story after story, you've heard about people getting mauled and surviving because the old story of you play dead with a grizzly bear is true. And they tend to, not always, but they tend to leave you alone and go away, or maybe, and here's the worst part of it, if you do survive a grizzly bear attack, the worst thing that can happen is after they think you're dead, they'll drag you off the trail. They'll cover you with sticks and branches and stuff, but they still tend to go away and then come back later to have their meal. And it's at that point you just get up and go, and I mean go. So with a grizzly bear, in fact, you play dead. You do everything you can to not threaten it and play dead. And with a black bear, you fight for your life because like a polar bear, they're just going to kill you. Isn't that weird?
Dang. That's interesting. I hope that black bears don't have a taste for macadamia nuts and plantain chips, or I may have just completely screwed you. Are you doing... And actually, before I ask you this question, I should clarify. Those of you who do not know Craig, I just took for granted that you would know him because this is his fourth time on my show.
It's the fifth.
Really, yeah. I'll put a link to all of Craig's past episodes on the show. But in a nutshell, 30-second overview, Craig is a former extremely high-level competitive swimmer who shifted into climbing and altitude training and at the same time launched a nutrition supplement company called Biotropic that I discovered a few years ago. And I now use and load with his supplements before I go to races. It's kind of like beet juice on steroids. He's got chlorella, and he's got echinacea, and he's got different forms of algae, different forms of liver extract, basically everything that you'd need to legally dope your blood without actually using erythropoietin. When you combine his supplements with some of the proven ways that you can train for altitude, including like hypoxia training, of course, just going to altitude and training, and even doing like I do a lot of this high heat sauna training, which we've talked all about before in previous episodes, how to kind of biohack altitude training. It's incredibly potent. Like his stuff is a fantastic 1-2 combo for anybody who wants to boost the blood. And it also works really well for anything for which you'd need like kind of a full body Viagra effect, including sex. Your supplements are good pre-sex as well.
So I've had people comment on that. I never bring it up, but it's true.
Yeah, they're like boner pills, basically, except they're, again, without the Viagra and the prescription thrown in. But basically, that's the skinny on Craig. Is that a good 30-second overview, Craig?
That's good. I did build these products around my own experience, you know, when I was training for a couple of Olympic teams. So they were built with blood development, blood oxygenation, and red blood cell development in mind. And so what you're just saying about what Ben's saying about the, let's say the ED effect is sort of a pleasant after effect, an unintended but good consequence of this product. I never had that in mind, but it did work out that way.
Yeah, you just got to build in sound effects. You open up the capsule and it'll give you a little boing, oing, oing. Anyways, though, so go listen to Craig's previous shows if you want a deep dive into the ingredients of his supplements and to his background. Just go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com/cleanup. That's BenGreenfieldFitness.com/cleanup because, again, we're going to talk in a little bit about some of the, you know, calcium carbonate and dicalcium phosphate and microcrystalline cellulose and some of these other things you might see in your supplements that we want to have a little conversation around because I wanted to ask Craig about this. I noticed he was starting to clean up his own brand, and so I figured it'd it'd be a high time to get him on the podcast to talk about this. But we digress, because so you're doing this climb, 200 miles at altitude, 9,000, 12,000 feet. We talked about some of the nutrition considerations. You're navigating via map and compass. So like you mentioned, it's only waypoint. So it's pretty serious, pretty rough. Black bears thrown into the mix as well. Talk to me about how you're training for this thing in terms of not the nutrition piece, which we kind of touched on, but more like the training, or even, you know, if we want to go here, I know it annoys some people when I bring this up, but even like, you know, biohacks and things you're doing to speed up the process.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to be a bit insane about my training. And what I do, no one has to do this way. And I know you and I have some differences on training philosophy, but you know, I just come from a background that was unkind and brutal as a swimmer. That's just the way it is. There's nothing when you're trying to make an NC2A team or an Olympic team, an Olympic trials event, that's kind. There's nothing smiling about the sport of swimming. It's a hard sport. It's an unkind sport. And that's my background. That's what I'm used to. I'm used to being beat up. And so with that sort of background and one other backdrop here, I went on a hike several years ago. I got really interested in this high altitude training and hiking because my brother's a class 5 climber. He's been climbing as long as I've been swimming. And I read Krakauer's book, Into Thin Air, and I was fascinated and really a bit surprised at the personality types that did that kind of climbing up Everest and back. I thought they were crazy and insane and couldn't understand them at all, because it's one thing to, it's one thing to train for an event. It's another thing to want to get to the top of Everest. It's hard stuff, and it takes months, and it's very expensive. But after a while, I just got more and more intrigued, and I called my brother and said, "Hey, let's go up the Grand together. Why don't you take me up on your next hike?" And the short version of that story is, I don't think I've told you this story, but the very short version of that story is, he said, just show up. You don't need to train or anything. You know, you were once a world-class athlete. I said to him, gee, that doesn't make sense. You know, I think you got to train for this stuff. You can't just show up and do it. And he kept assuring me everything would be fine. Well, the bottom line is, it wasn't fine. I did listen to him. I didn't follow my own good instincts and my own good judgment. And I showed up, and I just got the crap beat out of me by the mountain. I couldn't handle it. I knew 10 steps in. And these are straight up mountains. They start with trails, and then eventually they go a bit off trail, and you're in scree, and you're in talus and granite boulders and big rocks and stuff like that. It gets hard. And the bottom line is, it just screwed me up bad. I was out of shape. I couldn't handle it. I had 50, 60 pounds on my back. And I never forgot that experience, and you know, went back to training really, really hard for these events. So that's a backdrop to explain why I do it the way I do it now. No one needs to do it the way I do it. I'm a bit insane this way. But so I'll swim about, because that's my background. And just for conditioning and lung work, I do about 3,000 yards a day in a master's program here. In Texas, I train in Texas, which is hill country. It's not flat, but it sure as heck is in California or where you live. You've got great mountains around you that can really, really get you trained for this sort of event. So I don't have that going on. I have to kind of find every way I can to replicate the difficulty. So what I do is 3,000 yards a day, 5 days a week. I get into the gym 3 days a week, but with a trainer, because I need to be pushed beyond my capability. I do not like to... in the pool, I can't, my capability. No one can spot you. No one can push you. They can just yell at you, you know, and you can work as hard as you can do. But in the gym, I hire a trainer to push me beyond my capabilities. And there's a reason for that. I don't like it. There's nothing about it I like. I've just learned that the alternative is worse. So I'd rather do the pain now and make the training inglorious, so that when I get to my event, it's a glorious event. And then lastly, so I swim hard 5 days a week. I'll get in the gym 3 days a week and train very, very hard. A lot of leg work, tons of leg work, deadlift, squats, stuff like that. But then I have a training backpack, and I currently I'm walking with about 70 pounds on my back, which is more than I'll carry. I'll go out into the backcountry with somewhere right around 30 pounds. And so I'll do on the weekend a 10-mile, 70-pound weighted hike in hill country. So and I can make it tough. It's, even though it's not mountainous, I can make it very, very hard here. There are difficult climbs here to do, despite the fact they're only hills, but you can make it hard. And then during the week, I'll do, you know, I'll shorten that up, and I'll drop the weight down to about 50 pounds and do 2-3 mile hikes. So 3, 3, and 10 on the hikes, swimming and in the gym. And then I won't taper for this event. I'll train hard right up to the event because I'm going to be out there. It's going to take me about 2 to 2.5, let's just say 2 to 3 weeks to complete it. So I figure I'll let my body begin to taper and rest on the trail. So I'll go in tired. And that's what my training looks like. But I, again, I do it that way because that time.
I don't get that. Why would your body taper and rest when you're already out there, you know, at altitude beating yourself up?
Well, it's true that it's going to be tough at altitude. I'm going to have some oxygen issues up there. It's definitely going to be a lot of vertical, and it's going to be put a lot of work on my body. But I know my body really well, and I've done this kind of training before for this specific type of event. When I went back to the Grand, because I got spit off the mountain so hard and so embarrassingly, that I went and did what I believed I knew best for my body and trained just the way I've described to you, and they end up being just glorious events. So when I say taper, let me. It's a great question, by the way. You put that really well. Let me just dial that in a little bit. And when I mean taper, what I mean is when you back off that kind of work, 15,000 yards a week, 15 miles of very hard, heavy hiking, and gym work, your body does go through some amount of rest. Now, it's true, some of that is mitigated by the fact that you're now climbing straight up and down up at altitude and dealing with oxygen issues. But the net result has historically been, boy, I love this question because you're making me really think hard about what's coming up here. Historically, that type of training does wonders for me, and the event ends up being, I can almost ultra run. That's a bit of an exaggeration. I can almost run the mountains when I train that way. But you've hit the nail on the head, and I have to really, really think about this too, because this is the first time I'm going to be going into a situation where my work is not measured in miles. So I mentioned 10 miles and 3 miles and stuff like that. But on this particular walk, as they like to call it in the mountaineering community, it's all about the vertical, not the miles. So the miles will be dictated by how much vertical I can do on a daily basis. So and the degree of angle, right? The degree of incline. So all of that adds up to, at the end of the day, you look at your vertical and you see what the miles are, and that's how you begin to figure out what your average is going to be. So it's a whole new way of thinking about it. So that's a really, really good question and something that's new to me and took me a second to realize this is not like going up the Grand like I used to do. This is a whole different ball of wax. Even though the Grand is basically straight up and straight down, that's a three-day event. This is...
Yeah. The reason I asked you, you know, one of the best pieces of advice, I think Peter Reed, who won a whole bunch of Ironman triathlons back in the day, he gave me this advice when we were teaching a cycling camp together. He said it's better to go into the race or the event 1%, how did he put it? 10% undertrained versus 1% overtrained. It's better to go in 10% undertrained versus 1% overtrained.
Time and time again,
I've had my best events when I feel like, dude, I got sick 2 weeks ago going into the race and didn't get the training in I wanted to get in. I got forced to rest because I was traveling too much. My kids had a bunch of stuff going on, so I couldn't work out going into this race. Couldn't do the stereotypical, you know, panic training. And the race just turns out way better. Your legs are light as a feather, and you're totally tapered and super compensated.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and also one I think is worth taking a minute, at least from my point of view, to talk about. So I love that idea. When I think of 10% undertrained, what that means to me, or how I would think about it or approach that, is come off training, begin a tapering process that's event specific, so that you go in as you're pointing out, somewhat rested. That's critical, and I agree with that. And the term overtraining is a bit of a misnomer. And so when I use the term overtraining, I sort of use it as a very loose term, meaning I train really hard, but I don't overtrain, because overtraining is a really important, it's a technical word in sports. And if you overtrain, you're exhausted, you can't get anything done. Tapering doesn't really work. You beat up, you're exhausted, and you don't have a good event if you overtrain. I've had friends do that. They've been kicked out of workout by the team physicians for, you know, 3 or 4 days to just rest and come back around. So there is such a thing as, I'll just call it for now, true overtraining, which is detrimental, and no amount of tapering fixes that. You just have to rest and then come back to training. Whereas what I do, which is just say tons of volume training, but I always know how to train inside, let's say, the envelope, so that I don't move to that point where, like what you just described and what Reed just described, doesn't happen to me. So in other words, because it's 2 weeks long, because it's not a day event, If it was a day event, I'd taper for this. I'd back off. Yeah. I'd start backing off 2 weeks out, big time. I'd be backing off, and I'd go in just like you described. He calls it 10% undertrained. I'd prefer to think of it as tapered, which in a way is, you know, you've reduced training and you're not at your – the tricky thing about tapering is people don't understand is that you're not at your mid-season best or at your highest level of training. You can't lift as much. You can't maybe run as far when you're tapered. But what – if again, if it's event-specific – you're going to have like what you do, a world-class event, your best run, your best bike ride, because you're lean, you're clean, everything is rested. The rest is critical, and you're going to have the best event possible if you're tapered properly. So I would do that if it was a day or two event or even a three-day event. But because it's such a long event, I think I got to go in tired and just figure it out. I mean, so some of this is an experiment for me. I've never done it this way before. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so there's zero trails. Does that mean you're basically just bushwhacking?
It's effectively zero. Let's just, to be really, really clear, it's roughly 200 miles. It starts on a trail that's about, you know, I think 5 miles long. And then from that point, you go off trail. And about, if I remember correctly, about 30 miles of the 200 miles does go back on trail. It'll pick up the PCT, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the John Muir Trail, and a couple of obscure trails for just a minute here and there. Because on those spots on this particular route, the guy who invented this route, way back in the 70s, those areas that end up going on trail are because the terrain is so rough, it's not recommended to go any further. So he found a way to circumvent what would end up being class 5 climbing, which I'm not interested at all in doing, rope, carabiner, and rappelling and all that stuff. I wouldn't do that alone anyway. So this is designed to be something that you can do for 200 miles. And while difficult, I mean, some people – I think I sent you an article someone wrote calling it the hardest hike in America.
You sent me that article, and I want to link to that. If folks go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/cleanup, it's a really great article on Gizmodo written by this guy that not only did it, but kind of – he spelled out a lot of the gear that he used as far as the GPS and the watches and everything that he used to actually do the event. Some really good links to maps. So, I mean, if you're listening in and you're heavy into hiking and you want to try something like this out, it's a great article. So I'll link to that one in the show notes. It's called The Hardest Hike in America.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You got to check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full-spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order.
It is interesting what you say about the supercompensation and the overreaching and then bouncing back or tapering, Craig. And I don't know if you track this stuff, but I've been using the Oura Ring lately, and you could use a heart rate variability app. You could use body temperature tracking. You can even use these pulse oximeters that track your oxygen. But the idea is that, for example, when I sit around for a few days going into a race and I only do some walks, a little bit of sauna, some swimming, you know, some easy elastic band work, stuff like that, I see my body temp during the night drop. I see my heart rate variability, especially during the night, because this thing takes 5-minute measurements all during the night. That goes up. I see my actual heart rate decrease, which goes along with the body temperature decreasing. And then if you take your pulse oximetry, which is very easy to do, I've got a little pulse oximeter here on my desk, it climbs from 97 to 98 to 99. You know, as your body builds all these new red blood cells after it's no longer getting beat up and they have a chance to, you know, in a sense, catch up. It's actually very cool and very easy to see what happens when you taper the right way. And it's also interesting to see what happens when you ignore it going low. You know, you can predict injury or illness pretty accurately. So yeah, it's kind of cool what happens to the body, and also cool that we live in a day and age where you can track it pretty intensively. So do you use any of these self-quantification devices, by the way?
You know, you're busting me and you're outing me here. I don't, and I need to. And I'm starting to move into some of this other technology. I guess a lot of what I do is just sort of been the way I've done it. Doesn't make it right, and it's not complete. But I need to do that stuff. So that's a great piece of advice.
Yeah. Well, what you have been doing is you've been cleaning up your supplements. I want to talk about this. So you've got all these formulas, and you wrote to me and told you kind of optimized the formulas, and you kept the same amount of ingredients because you have your Oxea, which is the one that buffers lactic acid and increases oxygen delivery, and then the other one's the Chlorella for the immune system and the red blood cell production, and then also your AFA, which also has the liver in it, which is great for, again, red blood cells, blood flow, hormones, and the immune system. But these were originally tablets. I actually used to chew them. Like you would send me these bottles, and I'd just throw them in my mouth and chew them like a meal. Tell me about why you switched to capsules, which is what I broke open and put into my smoothie this morning.
Yeah. All right. Another great question here. There are two reasons for this, and it really began a couple of years ago when I got some feedback from some of the ladies saying, "Gee, Craig, it's a big tablet. You know, is there any way you can cut it back?" And I said, "Gee, I've got to do that research and figure it out and see if there's a way to do that that makes sense." And then I got some feedback from some other customers that said, "You know, this stuff really works." I have two. They're not sponsored, but they're two. Professionally sponsored athletes that used to, like you, that use the products and have done the blood test, the blood work on it. And they're very serious. They're no nonsense. They don't say what isn't so, at least for them. Again, I always speak in terms of one's own individual experiences. What's true for me may not be true for you, and so on. So I like to be really transparent about all this. So speaking certainly for myself and them, and maybe to some degree for you too, they did the blood work. They have to do the blood work, and they're tested by these governing bodies all the time. And they're getting phenomenal uptake, and they were getting the same result I get, which I do get a bump in red blood cell production. I do get when I do my chlorella formula with the echinacea, when I'm disciplined about it, I get colds way less often. So I knew that the formula is really good, and I didn't want to do anything to impact that. So I talked to my manufacturer and said, "Look, how much of what's in my formula is binders that hold it all together?" And by the way, a lot of people, of those people too, I would say what you do. I say, "Look, blend it up in a blender or crush it up into a drink and or eat it." And it wasn't a bad tasting at all. You could taste most of the ingredients, not the binders. But I had a few people say, "Gee, I just prefer not to have that stuff in there." So I looked up all of these ingredients, and I suppose there's some discussion on the kinds of things that bind my ingredients together, or ingredients in general in many, many supplements which have the ingredients I took
out.
Like
magnesium stearate and sodium selenate and titanium dioxide and all this stuff.
Yeah, very common. And I thought, well, what if I could get a cleaner uptake? So anyway, I talked to my manufacturer and said, "How much of the formula is actually to get that 1 milligram pill is actual binder?" And it was 40% of it. And I said, "Hell, get rid of it, clean it up. People would like not to have it. Many people have wished not to have it." And so I said, "Just take it out and let's move to a capsule and purify it." So now when you take it, you're just getting pure, clean ingredient. There's no, as I call it, my own term, competitive uptake. So in other words, the calcium carbonate, the dicalcium phosphate, these are the things that were taken out. Microcrystalline cellulose, stearic acid. Here's one I'm not all that familiar with. Crosomellose sodium. Whatever that is, silicon dioxide and pharmaceutical glaze, all gone. So there's just no reason. It's not stuff that's going to hurt you, but there's no reason to have it in there. And I'd rather create a product that's cleaner and more optimized and has better uptake and gives you a better hit. And it's
The sodium cross-carmelase, that's an emulsifier. It's used to make the ingredients kind of mix together a little bit better. And emulsifiers are pretty common in a lot of these supplements. But yeah, ultimately, the more you can take out, the better. But I want to take a little bit more of kind of a deep dive into a few of these ingredients. Like dicalcium phosphate. So that bulks out tablets. I know it's not very well absorbed or used by the body. It's like this cheap, inorganic form of calcium. And a lot of people see calcium and they just assume that calcium is in there, so it must be good for you. But it's inorganic, it's inexpensive, and your body doesn't actually absorb it. So if anything, one thing I've noticed that tends to cause in people when they eat a lot of this in their supplements is constipation. Like the high levels of the calcium carbonate and dicalcium phosphate, you don't have to worry too much, in my opinion, about like excessive calcification in the bloodstream and arterial calcification, things like that, because a lot of it doesn't get absorbed at all. It just kind of sticks around in the gut. But that's where you get the issues with constipation. So that's one reason I was kind of happy to see the calcium carbonate and dicalcium phosphate was taken out of there. Now, what about the cellulose? A lot of people just say the cellulose is basically a microcrystalline cellulose. It's a fiber. Did you just take that out to have a smaller capsule, or what was your reasoning behind the cellulose piece?
Well, I took it all of it out for two reasons. A, to get a – so yes, you heard what I said in the beginning there. Some of the people didn't like the size of it, so it got me – and it's not that much smaller, interestingly, but got a smaller capsule, and it just made sense to me that if I could get 100% pure ingredient here and get a slightly better hit, or any better hit at all, from just having pure ingredient in there, then it meant everything should have to go. And that was the thinking behind all of it, the microcrystalline cellulose and everything. It's just none of this stuff is necessarily bad for you or bad for you at all, but why not just get the purest, cleanest hit you can possibly get? And again, speaking for myself, the change, I feel a slightly better hit. I can't say that I get a massive hit, but I do get a change. I do get a better hit. And some of the sponsored racers that did the blood work get a better hit. So that's why I use
it. What do you mean better hit?
A stronger effect from it.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Get a stronger effect from it.
Okay, yeah, the cellulose is totally indigestible. That's one I wasn't too concerned about. I don't get too concerned about, usually it's called cellulose or microcrystalline cellulose on capsules. So that one I'm not as concerned about as the calcium. But then you also took out titanium dioxide. And that's interesting because they've actually shown titanium dioxide to be a potential carcinogen, and it's in a ton of supplements. In rodent studies, there's a direct link between titanium dioxide and respiratory tract cancer. But it's used in freaking toothpaste, it's used in supplements, it's used in pharmaceutical compounds. And again, if you're taking, I know a lot of listeners do this. They're taking 10, 15 different supplements. You're looking at a lot of titanium dioxide.
Yeah, it's just better to, I think, my own opinion, I just think it's better to get as clean as you can, and that's the whole idea behind optimization, just making this a pure ingredient formula. I mean, the only thing in there that's not a pure ingredient would just be now we have a gelatin capsule. And at some point here, we'll get a vegan option here too. But what I say to
vegans—
Oh,
because the gelatin is derived from animals.
Right, right. So what I tell people, but we do in effect have a vegan formula too in this regard. Just do what you did with the capsules. Just crush it up or open up the capsules and pour it into your water, pour it in your drink.
I didn't even think about that. So when I do that, I'm not actually getting the gelatin. So technically I could do, I'm using bone broth anyway, so it doesn't matter. But if I were vegan or vegetarian, you could literally just open it up and ditch the capsule. But have you formulated these to take into consideration the acidic environment of the stomach? Is it necessary for it to be a time release capsule or something like that for people who break open capsules?
That's another really good question. I haven't given that thought because as I was creating this stuff and how it worked on me didn't dictate that I had to think in those terms, but that's something worth putting some thought into. But no, that did go into this because for me, historically, when I take the stuff, I get the hit I want when I want it, which is usually within 20 or 30 minutes of taking it. And I never thought of it in terms of a time-released formula that would last throughout the day because remember, I come from a sprint background. So I want to get the best hit I can just ahead of my event. So whether it's training for 2 hours or hiking, I have to do it every day when I'm hiking several times a day. But that's how I looked at it. I never looked at it in terms of a time released.
Yeah, I know for probiotics, that's important. For probiotics, breaking them open and dumping them, a lot of times they're not going to survive the acidic nature of the stomach. And there are a few others that are like that. Usually they're like some type of gut compound or gut formula that you want to wind up in the small intestine or the large intestine a little bit more intact. But in most cases, it's a moot point to break it open, unless, again, it's like a probiotic or a gut type of support compound. Another one that was in there was magnesium stearate. And that one we see a lot in as well as a binder, in nutraceutical and pharmaceutical products. And, the research I've seen on that one kind of goes back and forth. The only compelling study I've seen was a slight suppression of immune function. And it can cause a little bit of gastric distress in some people, especially, again, if they're doing a lot of magnesium, meaning they're taking a lot of supplements. Because, if you're taking a handful, heck, I know some anti-aging enthusiasts who are taking 70 to 80 capsules a day of a wide variety of things. Then you're talking about literally tablespoons of magnesium stearate if you're going that route. And in my opinion, you get to the point where you do really want to take into consideration at that point, the amount of magnesium stearate or even the amount of, calcium carbonate or dicalcium phosphate that you're consuming. So for that, I think it just kind of depends on how much they're actually getting.
I think that's a really good point too. That along with the, as you mentioned earlier, the calcium carbonate and dicalcium phosphate, I think were the antagonists. And some people, very, very few, but very few people would say, gee, I love the product, Craig, but I'm having a little bit of a digestive issue with it. And it took me some time to figure out that those were likely the culprits. And so gone, they're just gone. And again, it just made more sense to create a product that's as clean and natural all the way through, that delivers pure energy, and just rid myself of all of these things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's a much better product today than it was yesterday.
Silica was one of the last ones that was in there that I know you took out. And that's another one I don't worry about too much. Actually, silica is one that can, some people will take that as a supplement for bone and collagen formation and skin and nail health. And you know, typically it's on the label silica or silicone dioxide compared to some of the calcium diphosphates and calcium ingredients. And, you know, some of these other things like, you know, that can cause some gut distress, like high levels of magnesium stearate. Silicone is not one that I worry about too much. You know, and you know, what I like though is that it's just a super clean capsule now when I look at the label. So in terms of what's actually in there, are there any excipients or fillers or anything like that? And if so, how do you even pull that off? Like why would somebody even put extra ingredients into a gelatin capsule if they weren't necessary? Like, are there disadvantages to taking all this stuff out?
No, not at all. There's only, as I understand it and see it, research talked about it. But I mean, I did this for a long time before I made the move. From my point of view, how about zero disadvantage and how about 100% advantage? Because again, you're just getting clean, pure ingredient now. That's the only thing your digestive tract is working on uptaking instead of working any of this other filler ingredient. So no, it's all upside as far as I know. I always defer to your expertise and people of your level. You're way up the curve on the science side of this stuff. But
well, I mean,
no,
when I went to Thorne and I toured their facilities, they told me that, you know, a lot of this stuff, you know, some of these anti-caking agents, for example, those are added to stop the ingredients from clogging up the machines. I mean, are you destroying factories with these things now, or do people not care about that?
No, I'm not destroying machines, and factories are surviving me. So no, we're not having any difficulty with that at all. It's not, and plus the product is meant to be used. It's not. I mean, it can sit on the shelf for as long as the lot number's in, or I think it's good for 2 years under these current conditions. Where I think the tablets might have been good for longer, but I just preferred to have people using the product, taking it when they need it. And anyone who's sitting it on the shelf for over a year probably isn't going to be using it anyway. So, no, we're not breaking machines, and factories are surviving me, and it's holding together just fine. And maybe just a shorter shelf life as a result of it. But
yeah, I was going to say, a lot of these things are preservatives, and they do allow for a little bit better, yeah, not only the ability of the ingredients to stick together or to make swallowing easier, that type of thing, or to maintain powder consistency, but it's to save ingredients from spoiling. And what you're saying is you may have shortened the life of your ingredients a little bit.
Yeah, and the trade-off, again, is a cleaner, purer ingredient with a better hit, as I see it and believe and have felt it. And as I say, if something's going to be sitting on the shelf for 5 years, you're probably not, you know, probably not training anymore. You're not doing much of anything. So I feel like it was a minor trade-off to get a better product that a few years on the shelf as opposed to 5 years on the shelf.
So how much of this stuff are you taking going into this hardest hike in America that you're doing?
So I'm trying to, you know, you've been a big inspiration to me. Part of the reason I'm doing this is because, you know, you're out there doing big stuff. And I said, gee, Ben's an inspiration. I need to do something big here. But I've always wanted to hike these long haul hikes anyway, like the AT.
I don't know, man.
Pacific.
I'm doing like hour long Spartan races. You're going on a multi. How many days is this thing going to take?
Don't dismiss that. I'm not buying that. Neither is the audience. You're a bad boy, and we all know it. This is about a 2 week event. It depends on how many miles I can do again. Well, look at, yeah, maybe not like this, but I think things are mostly relative. So the stuff you're doing, I can't do. I couldn't train for a Spartan event and get through that stuff. It'd blow me away. That's tough. It's what you're doing is hard stuff. You have my admiration here. I don't know how you do it. This is not quite like what you do, I think. I'm not saying the training isn't hard. I'm not saying it's not a difficult event. And I'm not saying that doing 7,000 or 5,000 vertical feet a day is easy. It isn't, but I think what you do is harder. I honestly, honest to God, think what you do is harder. So the way I'm training for it, I'm trying to, and so the other inspiration I've gotten from you, maybe I was an accidental hacker way back in the day when I was constructing this stuff. I didn't think of it that way. I was just trying to selfishly find something that would give me a competitive edge. And so these compilations came together, and for me, they worked. And so today things are a little different. You know, I got you out there hacking away and, you know, your creme de la creme group doing the same thing. And I thought, well, I'm going to be up here between 9 and 12,000 feet. AFA has the heavy iron content in it, and iron is a precursor. It's a huge, important ingredient for red blood cell production and energy, and that's the AFA product. So the way I'm looking at this is really the way I recommend most athletes do it, coincidentally, but I'll switch it up when I get out there, which is I'll probably take three of these things, the AFA, right out of the gate in the morning when I start to hit the trail, probably somewhere, let's say that's 6-7 in the morning, somewhere around 10 or 11, I'll drop Oxia to get some more vasodilation and some better oxygen delivery. And later in the day, I'll do the chlorella. That's been my routine. That's worked for my chemistry really, really well. I may switch that around up there and see what happens. I may start off with Oxia to get the immediate vasodilation, to get the bigger blood flow and the bigger oxygen delivery right out of the gate. But I really want to take advantage of the AFA product also because of the iron in it, the desiccated liver in it, and also because of the AFA's properties for repair, for muscle repair. So, I'm going to be in an environment that's brutal and hard and tough. And I'm going to
AFA being the Aquafluus LG.
Yes, am I pronouncing
that right? Aquafluus. Yeah. So back to training for a second. When you're strapping on this 70-pound backpack and you're going out and doing your rucking, you know, for me, especially when I was training for events like the Ultra Beast World Championships for Spartan and Tahoe and some of these events where you're climbing for a long period of time, I didn't want to damage my knees from doing the downhill component, right? Because what goes up must come down unless you got a helicopter or a car at the top to pick you up. Mm-hmm. So I would use this Nordic Track incline training. It goes up to like a 40% incline. Are you using anything like a Steramel or an incline trainer or actually another one? You know who swears by this is LeBron James. He has this. A whole bunch of folks in Hollywood use it now to get super fast results, you know, training to put on muscle or lose fat pretty quickly. As a matter of fact, I think that in all of his different houses across the country, LeBron James has one of these, and it's the VersaClimber. I know a lot of climbers use this as well. Do you use the VersaClimber or an incline trainer or anything like that?
Man, I've used that stuff so much in the past, and I'll come back to a phrase I've been using a little bit in this conversation here, which is event specific. So the answer is no, and the reason is that it's really phenomenal training. The problem is, in both cases, it's straight ahead training, meaning that if you're on a treadmill and you're eating, no matter what the angle is, no matter how hard you make it, you're walking a straight line. And there's no variation in the ground there. And it's the same thing with the VersaClimber. I recommend them both for adjunct training or ancillary training, cardio training, you know, conditioning training. But you have to get out there when you're going into this kind of environment where the ground is unstable, meaning there are boulders, there's granite there. This granite, you know, huge, giant granite slabs and talus, and the ground is moving and rock formations everywhere. It's, as I say, it's only about 30 miles of actual trail. The rest is all like I've just described. So I got to get out there and I've got to find places that can get as close to replicating the real thing, which is, you know, the weight, you don't have to go as heavy as I go. I do think when you're doing what I'm doing here, you should be training at a minimum up to the weight you're carrying. I just like to go in, you know, I like to train hard and heavy and go in light. But I think those are great, great ways to train, but I think it's a mistake. If you're doing a trail, I think that's fine. I think there's nothing wrong with doing a trail where, you know, it's mostly dirt. There's still going to be some unstable terrain there, but mostly dirt and well-trodden and hammered down. I think that VersaClimber is phenomenal. Hard, hard training. I try to avoid the VersaClimber, to tell you the truth. I was there when it came out, and it frightened me then, and it frightens me today, and I sort of look at it as some sort of monolith.
It's good, man. It came out in 1981, the year I was born, actually.
Yeah, it's a tough machine. So I go out with weight and try to replicate groundwork. So my ankles roll and turn, and I go through all of that stuff.
Yeah. You know what? I kind of agree with you, but at the same time, because you know, I found that my ankles were pretty able to handle a lot of the downhill and the undulating and unpredictable terrain when I went out and did a lot of the races, especially during the year. I was using that Nordic Track incline trainer a lot. I would actually use, and this sounds dumb. I don't want to be one of those guys who's just like got a bunch of stuff in my basement, never gets up into the mountains. But these balance boards, and you know, I have like a fluid stance trainer here at my desk that I'll stand on while I'm working. And there's another one.
I do that. The
Bosu, obviously, is another one you can stand on when you're weight bearing. And then I do a lot of single leg training, you know, single leg squats. When I'm in the sauna doing my heat training, I interviewed this gal named Belissa Vranich, and we talked about, it was Emily Splachow. We talked about her book, Barefoot Strong, and she has all these exercises to strengthen your ankles and the supporting musculature for your ankles while you're just like, you know, brushing your teeth or in the sauna. And I'll link, if you guys go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/cleanup, I'll link to my interview with her. But dude, I mean, like, you know, I know it sounds like a silly little biohacker who doesn't want to go outside and run downhill through the rocks, but especially if your time is limited or you're stuck indoors, you know, you're working at an office, I think that 1-2 combo of doing something like the incline trainer with a balance board or a balance device can get you decently strong as far as that ankle health is concerned.
I totally agree, I agree with all of that. First of all, I just sort of have a preference of trying to emulate what it is I'll be doing, where I'm going in my training. So that's the only reason why. Plus, the fact of the matter is the VersaClimber scares the shit out of me. So that's just being honest with you. But that balance work you're talking about is phenomenal, and it's not crazy at all. That really does help. I have weak ankles, so everyone says, yeah, you got to go out with trail running shoes or special hiking shoes that free up your ankles so you can move. And I say, gee, you know, you don't know me. And you're wrong about that. In my case, I have to have at a minimum mid-ankle support because I roll. And the exercise you just described is perfect for that. It's just perfect whether you're brushing your teeth or doing it at your desk like you are in the gym for strengthening ankles. And not only are you strengthening your ankles, but you're getting great balance work. And I deal with a lot of balance problems out there, not internally, just you're in an environment that checks your balance all the time. So the balance board work or the ball work, you know, really, really phenomenal for getting your balance in line and also strengthening your ankle. Couldn't endorse that move really for any sport. I think that's great for any sport.
Yeah. The other thing that I should harp upon with this ankle issue, because I played college tennis and just brutally destroyed my ankles. Between that and high school basketball, like, I had sprained ankles all the time growing up. And I overuse this one muscle related to the ankles now. Whenever I get a massage, I have my massage therapist work on this because it gets super duper tight, because this particular muscle, I'll tell you about it, overworks to protect the ankles. And when it overworks, it gets tight, it gets adhesed, and that actually affects your knee mobility. So I get knee pain if I don't have a massage therapist work on this area. And it's difficult to hit yourself deep enough with, you know, a foam roller or anything else. It's your peroneal tendon that travels up and down. Yeah, that the outside of the leg, it kind of runs down the lower leg bone, the fibula, and kind of behind that bony lump on the outside of your ankle.
That is the part that I roll.
Lateral malleolus. Yeah, dude, you get deep tissue work done on that if you have ankle issues. Helps tremendously. Like, whenever I get that area worked on, it's one of the tightest, most teeth-grittingly tight areas on my body. But anybody who spends a lot of time on their feet, I'm telling you, like ask your massage therapist or look up like a picture of the peroneal tendon. And if you can, you can try to hit it with like a golf ball or a type of thing. But man, that area for people with ankle issues is golden once you figure out how to increase mobility in the peroneal tendon.
It's totally true. But another thing I want to, you know, now that I'm giving it a little more thought here about, you're talking about downhill and knees and stuff like that. Another reason why I go out there and try to replicate the real thing is in the climbing, you know, community up to class 4, it's really, really, really hard to replicate going downhill the way you just described. The effect on your knees, the effect on the quads, hamstrings, glutes, totally changes when you're going downhill versus uphill. So I'm really good uphill and I'm not as good downhill. And it's really, really hard to train for that in the gym on a VersaClimber, even on an inverse incline treadmill. You really need to do a lot of downhill work and build up to that so that you can strengthen your knees for that particular movement and get used to the rear part of your body doing the work as opposed to the front part of your body, you know, hams and glutes and gastrocs as opposed to quads.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why event for this, again, specifically for, you know, a lot of vertical up and down, 7,000 up, 7,000 down. You got to do something that gets you into a scene where you're walking downhill with weight on your back. And just further to that point, I think of training in the backcountry the same way I think of training in the gym. It's going to be in variable sets, and I'm moving up. So I might start very, very light just to warm up and loosen up, and just go through a series of increasing weights, using gym as an analogy here to the backcountry. So I met a guy yesterday who's going out in 7 weeks to the same area but not the same hike, and he's breaking in his shoes with 7 weeks to go with no weight on his back at all. I said, dude, you're behind the curve, bud. Jeez. You need to get some. Yeah, exactly. Jesus, I was sort of shocked. I said, you gotta get some weight on your back here. You gotta get 10 pounds in this week. So this is an example of what I tell people. Just do 10 pounds this week. You have 7 weeks to go, which is not a lot, but then next week do 20, then the next week do 30. By the time you get to 40, it's a big jump, but you should be able to handle it. But steadily going up in weight over a long – I've been training for 4 months now for this, so I'm ready to go now. I wish I could just get up and go now, but my permits don't let me into the high country until till August, so I can't go till August. I'll be going in August 7th and hopefully coming out sometime around August 23rd, right in the room
August
there.
August 7th like to that. August 23rd. Can people track this at all? Are you running like an Instagram account or anything like that?
Yeah. Good question. Thanks for bringing it up. I'm bringing in just in case, because it is very remote and I'm going solo terrain. Bringing a DeLorme tracker in with me, so I'll put that. I'll send it to you so you can have it, and people can log in and they can see where I'm at and what the trail looks like. And if they're curious about it, they can have a laugh at how long it's taken me to get done what I thought would be done much quicker. How about that?
Okay, so, cool. Yeah. So send that over to me, and I'll put a link in the show notes, which are going to be at bengreenfieldfitness.com/cleanup if any of you guys want to track Craig. And then also I'll put a link to the previous episodes that I did with Craig over there, and some of the other stuff we talked about in today's show, everything from my breakfast smoothie / bone broth thing that I made this morning to the Biotropic website. I know we can get 20% off of all Craig supplements. Use code Ben. The AFA is, like Craig mentioned, the Floss Aqui LG, beetroot powder, cordyceps, and liver anhydrase. You don't like liver, you can just take his capsules every day. I take them every day, so I don't have to worry that much about doing my serving of liver every week. And then chlorella, beetroot powder, cordyceps, and echinacea is in his second one, the one that's called chlorella. And then the last one's called oxia, and that one's malic acid and citrulline for buffering lactic acid, kind of staving off the burn. That's another one that works really well anytime you need to get your pump on or get the blood flowing. So any of those three, if you guys are listening, you can get a discount with code Ben. I'll put a link in the show notes to Craig's website for all that stuff. And then you can also go over there and track Craig. Craig, as usual, dude, it's always interesting to talk to you and pick your brain about what you're up to. Man.
Well, it's always my pleasure. I love talking to you. You're a sharp dude. And I always learn something talking to you. So thanks for taking the time, man. It's been a blast. It's always a blast.
Awesome. Thanks. And by the way, if I sounded mildly distracted during this interview, I just got back last night from where the heck was I? It was
you were probably on top of some mountains.
Boise, Idaho. Sometimes I forget where I was. And I was racing the Spartan down there. My hotel I stayed at, this I'm going to shove them under the bus, the Grove Hotel in Boise, I got covered in bed bug bites. And I woke up this morning and my elbow is swollen like the size of a baseball from all this venom that's in my elbow. Like I've got these little bites. I smeared myself in myrrh and frankincense essential oil last night to kind of draw some of it out. But dude, like right now, like while we're talking, my right arm, like even my fingers are throbbing from this elbow all swollen up. So if anybody's listening in and you've got tips for me to suck out the venom from a bed bug bite, or you can pull any sway with the Grove Hotel and tell them to clean up their beds. I'm all ears. This thing's banging in my side right now. I'm gonna have to fix this thing up. You don't have any supplements for that, dude? Do you?
give me a few weeks and I'll get you hooked up. I'll come up with something.
Somebody needs also, that'd sell like hotcakes. Bed bug supplement.
Someone's got to come up with it. Why not me? Yeah. But also, you're being humble. He's what he's also not telling y'all is that he's going to be on the cover of Outdoor Magazine in the coming months and doing an interview there.
I think it's called Outside Magazine.
Man. Outside Magazine, yeah. Pardon me. Outside Magazine. So, hey, yeah. Easy slip. But anyway, it's a big thing, and that's really cool. I'm looking forward to reading that article.
I'm actually rushing off to an interview with them right after this.
Okay.
So, again, folks, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/cleanup. That's where I'll have all the show notes. Thanks for listening in. And until next time, I'm Ben Greenfield and Biotropics Labs CEO, founder, crazy mad scientist, inventor, Craig Dinkle. Signing out from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Always fun. Thanks a lot. See y'all. Bye-bye.
Have an amazing week.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.